end of the His Hardline podcast, where we ignite independent and accurate thought, break the chains and shackles of mental bondage, challenge societal norms, and traverse through the timeless teachings of our Heavenly Father. Join us as we liberate minds and embrace the power of the Great Awakening while embracing true sovereignty. Welcome to the show.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Thank you for tuning into the His Hardline podcast. And if you want to find more shows like this, along with our social media links, you can find all that at hishardline.com. I am Jason, your co-host, with our Sovereign Lord and Savior Christ Jesus at my side, because he is the host with the most and the most high. He's at the helm, behind the wheel, in the captain's chair, and he's steering this great ship of ours through these crazy rough waters in this storm that we call life. So welcome to His Hardline. Today's show title is called The Great Americans and Achievements, which is a reading out of the Field Training Manual 2000-25. This will be part two from the previous recording. And today's reading will be out of Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14. Daily disclaimer. I want to clarify that while I proudly serve as a lawful and honorable member of the Michigan General Jural Assembly in good standing, my expertise does not extend to being a licensed doctor, holistic health expert, financial advisor, biblical scholar, or bar lawyer. Additionally, I am not the official face or voice of the National, State, or County General Jural Assembly. And remember, I do not advocate for violence unless it's in self-defense of your family and those around you. Please note that the opinions, thoughts, and statements expressed in this platform are solely my own and for educational and entertainment purposes only. So, glad to have you all here at the His Hardline podcast. And I'm hoping that you guys are getting some serious value out of the reading of the Field Training Manual, because it is relevant. It is very relevant. There's a reason why FDR tried to destroy every physical copy of this Field Training Manual. He tried to destroy every single copy of this Field Training Manual. And you might be wondering, well, Jason, why would he do that? Well, if you have never heard me talk about this before, let me just say it again. FDR tried destroying this because it helped return a democracy. All right. It helped return a democracy. Sorry for all those chimes. I don't know what's going on here. But it turned a country back to the republic that it needed to be, from a democracy. And, well, why is that important, Jason? I thought we were supposed to be a democracy. No, we're not supposed to be a democracy. If you actually read our founding documents, and I mean actually read them, don't just take someone else's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Go read. Go read the U.S. Constitution. Go read the Declaration of Independence. Go read the Fundamental Orders of 1638. Go read the Magna Carta. Go read, Go read the Bill of Rights, the Articles of Confederation. You are not going to find the words Democratic Republic. You're not going to find the words democracy. You're not going to find any of those kind of words in our founding documents. Nor are you going to find the word state national, by the way, except in the U.S. Code, which is a corporate-made entity, okay? So this is a very important reading that we're doing, and I'm telling you, this is really interesting, and I tell you, God is really working in a very profound way, because I've been noticing just this month alone, I've had more countries and around the world that have been tuning into this podcast, not quite in obviously high download numbers like the U.S., right, like the United States, But I'm seeing people, I'm seeing downloads, you know, in my metrics, my statistics in the background there, right? My analytics showing Israel and the United Arab Emirates, Japan, South Africa, obviously Australia. I'm seeing a lot come out of Switzerland, UK, Canada. What else? Gosh, I can't even think. There's so many other ones, Mexico, Belize, but I have a funny feeling. I know who's in Belize. That's somebody that's an assembly member from the States, but, there's just so many people from different parts of the world that are starting to tune into this channel. And it's crazy. I've had more downloads from different countries, or I should say I have had more countries from around the world downloading at least a certain podcast here. And I think a lot of that has to do with Mike Gill, because Mike Gill is the one truther out there that, they try shutting up, that they've tried taking his life, because he has the goods on all of these people. And when I say all of these people, all these criminals from DC to New Hampshire and everything in between, and he holds what's called the Pandora Papers. Trump has the Pandora Papers. Trump cannot open Pandora's box completely or all the way without Mike Gill. And I think 2024 is going to be a very pivotal year for that. So anyways, but before we get into the reading of Philippians and then the, you know, get into the second half of lesson four, which again is the great Americans and their achievements, all right, we are going to, I want to play a couple audio pieces here for a second. First audio piece, which I find really relevant, again, sometimes I like to do this, but I feel like people need to hear this regarding our public education system. Give this a quick listen to.
Schools are the most dangerous place in America today. Every bad habit I learned was in school. Alcohol, cheating, skipping, lying, scamming. It's slow. It's a waste of time. They're not teaching anything that's relevant anymore. The school system's telling the kids not to use AI. We have this unbelievable technology. Why would I not use it? It's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah. And I agree with everything you're saying, but to be a devil's advocate, how expensive is the homeschooling? Can most families even afford that option?
Well, it's definitely cheaper than public schools.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
How would it be cheaper though?
Because my kids don't become addicts. $35,000 to send your kid to a treatment center.
I got introduced to being in public school and all that stuff. People are doing
it's all accelerated now. You're going to be an addict and confused about whether you're a boy or a girl. Could be a cat.
Could be a cat. Yeah, he's not wrong. The public school systems are the most dangerous places in the world right now for your kids, especially if you're here in America, okay? Because they have an agenda that they're pushing. They have a certain ideology that they're pushing. And what is that? Well, that's to try to diminish the, well, first off, to try to pretty much destroy the nuclear family. They're trying to demasculinize men, all right? And what else are they trying to do? They're trying to destroy the family because they know that a strong family is a strong foundational cornerstone of America and how we have our, you know, how we build back our Republican form of government. And so how do you destroy a Republican form of government? You destroy the family. It's very simple. It's very cut and dry. One last audio piece I want to play. Now, this one I had to really edit. I've had to really edit, all right, because this guy likes to drop a lot of F-bombs and S-bombs, all right? So if you hear a foghorn, those were expletives, okay? But the message is still important, which is why I went through the trouble to do it. So give this a listen to, because this is very, very important as well.
You need to recognize that driven people always feel behind. They're always going to have doubt. They're always going to have chips on their shoulder. That's what makes us great at what we do. It's not the affirmations. It's not the feel-good bullshit. It's the dark shit. It's the people that told us we were losers. It's the people that told us we were pieces of shit. And anybody who tells you different, they haven't achieved anything. Look at what they've achieved. It's probably a bunch of smoke and mirrors. Real motherfuckers remember all the dark shit. They take the dark shit and they put it into productive action to build the life that they want.
That's right. And that's, and he's talking about, again, driven people, people who are driven. Okay. And, you know, I would consider myself a very driven man. Okay. I think a lot of people who are involved with their local general assemblies across this country are driven people. You always have doubt. You're always going to be riddled with different things in your mind. You're always going to feel like you are one step behind. And those are all traits of a driven man or woman. All right. So If you're feeling like that, rest assured that you're not alone, number one. But number two, not only are you not alone, but you are also, you also exhibit the markers of what a driven man or woman exemplifies, okay? These are all good things. So don't think that anything is wrong with you, okay? It's just, this is just how we're built, okay? Now, let's get into Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, because we got another long reading, because like I said, the reason I couldn't complete lesson 4 is because there was a lot in there. So to do that in an hour or less was just not happening. So Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, we're going to be getting into, this kind of gets into discussing gratitude for the Philippians' generosity. And it reads, I rejoice, and by the way, I'm reading out of the New American Bible Revised Edition. That's my preferred version that I like to read out of. And yes, I know there's tons and tons and different versions of the Bible out there. This happens to be one that I gravitate towards. There's specific reasons for that. Doesn't necessarily mean it is the one. So just FYI, everybody's got their versions. Everybody likes NIV. There's people that like, you know, NASB 95 edition. There's people that like, you know, the old English ones, 1599 Geneva Bible. All right. So I try to bounce back and forth from the 1599 Geneva and, the NABRE, which is the one I read out of most of the time, but just understand, I know there's different versions. Just read the one that resonates with you. Okay. Verse 10, again, chapter 4, Philippians chapter 4, verse 10, I rejoice greatly in the Lord that now at last you revived your concern for me. You were, of course, concerned about me, but lacked an opportunity. Not that I say this because of need, for I have learned in whatever situation I find myself to be self-sufficient. I know indeed how to live in humble circumstances. I know also how to live with abundance. In every circumstance and in all things, I have learned the secret of being well-fed and of going hungry, of living in abundance and of being in need. I have the strength for everything through him who empowers me. Still, it was kind of you to share in my distress. And that's the end of the reading. So just kind of a little bit of a kind of, you know, kind of like a reflection on this. Now, this teaching from this passage in Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, can be understood as emphasizing the importance of self-sufficiency and resilience and gratitude, right? All of these things align with the values of, in my opinion, the American spirit that we have been reading about in this field training manual 2000-25, right? It aligns with the values of the American spirit of forging forward, especially during the founding of this country. And at the core of this teaching that we just read here is the idea that individuals should learn to be content and resilient in all circumstances. But Jason, that's a little tough considering the economic climate that we're in. I understand that. I absolutely understand that wholeheartedly, because yours truly is also in the trenches with you, dealing with the same economic hardships as a lot of you are. Now, just as the early American settlers faced numerous challenges and uncertainties, we also are going to deal with similar challenges just on a different level. But the Apostle Paul, in this case, from what we read, you know, he acknowledges his ability to endure both, not just abundance, but also in scarcity. He endured both, and he found strength and resilience through his faith, enabling him to persevere and navigate through various life situations, just like what we have to do, like we have to learn to do. And similarly, the American, you know, the early American pioneers and settlers exhibited this remarkable spirit of resilience and determination as they faced daunting challenges such as, you know, harsh environments and conflicts with the Native Americans and economic hardships. They've dealt with all of this. Okay, they dealt with all of this. And like Paul, they relied on their inner strength. They relied on their resourcefulness. And Most importantly, they relied on their faith to overcome these obstacles and forge forward in pursuit of their goals. So, you know, this passage, it highlights the importance of gratitude for the support and generosity of others. It also echoes the spirit of community and mutual assistance that characterized many early American settlements. And just like Paul expressed gratitude for the Philippians' kindness and support, the early Americans often relied on each other for help and solidarity as they worked together towards building their communities and pursuing their aspirations. So, I mean, in essence, what we just read here in Philippians underscores yet again more timeless values of resilience, self-sufficiency, gratitude, and community support, which resonates with the enduring spirit of perseverance and determination that has defined the American experience, particularly during the formative years of our nation's history, which, if you really think about it, was not that long ago, not compared to European history. Now, let's get into the second half of Lesson 4, the Field Training Manual, which again is a field manual that was released to the Army by the War Department in 1928, 2000-25, Great Americans and Achievements, Part 2. Now, last recording, I said we were going to leave off at Section 63 with Lewis and Clark, so that is exactly where we're picking back up from. So in May in 1804, Captains Meriwether, Lewis, and William Clark proceeded to St. Louis, Missouri in obedience to the following order issued by President Jefferson by authority of Congress. Go up the Missouri to its sources, find out, if possible, the fountains of the Mississippi and the true position of the Lake of the Woods. Cross the Stony Mountains and having found the nearest river flowing into the Pacific, go down it to the sea. And just a little side note, folks, if you hear me stammer a little bit and maybe get tripped up over words, understand that when this was written in 1928, the way things were written back then are significantly different than how they are written today, less than 100 years ago. So just keep that in mind when you hear that. Normally when I read, I'm usually pretty flawless for the most part, with a couple of, you know, trip ups here and there because my eyes go faster than what my brain can comprehend and read out loud. But just so you know that there is a lot of different spellings, if you will, and, you know, grammar styles that is not commonplace to us today that has changed over time. So just a little side note. Now we get into what's called the expedition. Outfitting in St. Louis, Captain Lewis and Captain Clark, with four sergeants and 23 privates of a regular army and an Indian interpreter, began the long, tedious journey up the swift current of the Missouri, reaching its headwaters approximately 1 year later. Crossing the Rocky Mountains through the Bitterroot Range, they found the Clearwater River, proceeding down its course through exceedingly rough country to the Snake River in what is now Idaho. They continued on to the northwest to the junction of the Snake with the lordly Columbia, launching their canoes upon broad reaches of the most beautiful stream in October of 1805. They drifted down to the Pacific Ocean, reaching their destination in November 7, on 1 month later, returning from there to St. Louis. With their surveys and maps of the regions explored, they completed the required journey in a little over 2 years' time. The claim of the United States to territory established. How little was known of the great domain secured to the United States in the purchase of the Louisiana Territory is revealed in part by the wording of the President's order. How much was learned and its importance to the nation was contained in part in the report those two intrepid Army officers gave upon their return. The most important result obtained was the firm establishment of the claim of the United States by overland exploration, its first claim being made through the earlier discovery of the North Pacific country by Captain Robert Gray of Boston, who sailed his ship from the Pacific Ocean up a great river in 1792, naming it the Columbia, in honor of the 300th anniversary of the discovery of America by Columbus. The Lewis and Clark expedition gave the people their first idea of the vast area, enormous natural resources, and grandeur of the Pacific Northwest. They were the forerunners of what soon became a mighty host of emigrants into the land of the setting sun. Section 64, Reverend Marcus Whitman. 30 years after the Lewis and Clark expedition, Reverend Marcus Whitman packed all his earthly possessions in a wagon and, with his bride, trekked across the plains and mountains over what became known as the Oregon Trail to the Walla Walla country as a missionary to the Indians. Impressed with the beauty and richness of the country, he seemed to have lost sight of his special mission. As 7 years later, he took the trail back to civilization, there to urge his countrymen to follow him in the possession of this new land. Acting as guide for this band of emigrants, recruited largely in New England, he led them ever westward in the all but impossible journey of nearly 4,000 miles. The story of the hardships and perils, the labor sickness, starvation, the fight with Indians and nature, serves again to prove the sturdiness, self-reliance, and the courage of pioneers of America. Sterling qualities of racial stock, every advancing step in the progress of our nation emphasizes the sterling qualities of the racial stock that, handed down to succeeding generations, has given the urge and the will to do, the fruits of which are today enjoyed by a prosperous and happy posterity. These men and women who so bravely followed Whitman over the Oregon Trail saved that great country to the United States. The cry in 1846 was that the British must go. The whole of Oregon or none, 54-40, or fight. In the spirit of fair play and justice, the differences with Great Britain were adjusted and the boundaries were fixed, and another great step in the expansion and settlement of our nation was accomplished. Section 65, General John C. Fremont. As a junior officer of the United States Army at the age of 29 years, Fremont was designated by the Secretary of War to explore a route from western Missouri to the South Pass. In accomplishing his mission, he followed the Arkansas River to its source in the Rocky Mountains, and on a later expedition, he made his way through Utah to the Great Salt Lake, and then through the deserts of Nevada and across the Sierra Nevada, where he found his journey leading through the mammoth trees and along the roaring torrents of the California country, reaching the Mexican city of Monterrey, some 130 miles south of San Francisco on the Pacific Ocean. Now, I want to pause here for a second. Think about that trek for a minute. Think about that. That is insane. He followed the Arkansas River to the Rocky Mountains, and then later made his way to the Great Salt Lake City, all right, or what's now known as Salt Lake City in Utah. All right, so not only did he trek through treacherous terrain in the Rockies, it's not just typical hill country. You're going up some steep inclines, up and down or whatever, wherever he was going. Maybe he stayed in the valleys, but even if you stayed in the valleys, you are walking a lot. A lot of bad weather. Then he made his way to Salt Lake. Then he treks through the desert of Nevada. You imagine, first off, depending on what time of year he went through, could either be some of the hottest days or some of the coldest nights. Desert still gets cold, people. It gets cold. Then through the mammoth trees in California, reaching his way basically 130 miles south of San Francisco. Do you realize what kind of trek that was? That's crazy. That's the American right there that we don't see today. Continuing on, now talking about the Mexican War. Now through exercise of diplomacy, he was able to remain in this vicinity until after the outbreak of the Mexican War, when he headed a revolt against that government and freed the territory of California from Mexican authority, becoming the governor of the territory, which was ceded to the United States by treaty following the conclusions of the war with Mexico. Contemporary with Fremont, another brilliant young Army officer, Colonel Kearney, afterwards Brigadier General, fought his way across the plains of Texas to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and after its capture, continued across the deserts of New Mexico, Arizona, and Southern California to a union of his small army with Fremont in California. Now, as a result of the splendid work of these men, coupled with the success of General Scott and Taylor in Old Mexico, there was added to the domain of the United States the last of the great southwestern area, a territory of nearly 1 million square miles, a section of the country, which within 1 year thereafter became the goal of the adventurous spirit of the world due to the discovery of fabulous gold deposits along many of the watercourses flowing to the Pacific Ocean from the western slopes of the mountains bordering Eastern California. Section 66. Ellie Whitney, a pioneer of modern industry. The invention of cotton gin. A school teacher from Massachusetts living in Georgia in 1793 invented a machine called the cotton gin, by use of which a Negro could easily clean 300 pounds of cotton a day, demonstrating thereby, as no previous invention had done, the value of machinery in replacing or augmenting manual labor. The whole question of cotton production and cotton manufacturing was changed through the use of this invention. Previous to the invention of the cotton gin, cotton yarns were spun and woven into cloth by hand in private homes. Necessarily, by this slow method of manufacture, but small quantities of cotton were used. So rapid was the development of the industry, stimulated by this new gin, that within the next 20 years, exports of cotton to Liverpool increased tenfold. As a result of the invention of a cotton factory was erected in Massachusetts to produce cloth like that made in England. Here was constructed the first loom operated by water power in America. In 1814, there was built at Waltham, Massachusetts. I said built, it's worded builded. There's one of those things that I could have gotten tripped up on. But it was builded at Waltham, Massachusetts, the first cotton mill in the world, in which the raw material direct from a Whitney cotton gin was spun into thread, woven into cloth, and printed with colors all under one roof. The production of the cotton was stimulated and made one of the leading industries of the country. Cotton exports enormously increased. Allied industries developed. Communities grew rapidly into cities. Due to climate conditions, the manufacture of cotton goods was carried to New England, thus opening a new channel of employment, causing in following years of radical change in the nationality of the citizens of these northern states. While Whitney was the inventor of the cotton gin, because of the theft of his model and tools from the shed in which he conducted his experiments, he was not enabled to perfect his invention. He instituted the interchangeability of parts, which has greatly influenced the modern industry. In 1798, he secured a contract from the government for the manufacture of firearms, being the first to effect the division of labor by which each part was made separately. It was from this invention that he made his fortune. Section 67, Robert Fulton, a pioneer of steam navigation. It is proper and fitting to designate Robert Fulton as the pioneer of modern transportation by reason of his success in driving the Clermont in the year 1807 against the current of the Hudson River from New York City to Albany. It is true that no less than eight men had at various times and places propelled boats by steam power prior to this accomplishment by Robert Fulton, yet none of them carried out their experiments to a successful issue. Fulton's success was largely due to his cleverness and ingenuity, coupled with the fortunate circumstances of a partnership formed with Robert Livingston, a man of wealth also interested in solving the problem of steam navigation. Legislative grant. Now, Livingston was so sure of fiscal success through his own various experiments as to induce the legislature of the state of New York to pass a bill granting exclusive rights to navigate the water of that state by steam power, upon condition that a boat of 20 tons be driven by steam at a minimum speed of 4 miles an hour against the current of the Hudson. This feat to be accomplished within 1 year from the date of grant, He failed in his effort, and later he was appointed minister from the United States to France. The submarine. In 1803, while in Paris, Fulton demonstrated his submarine in the River Seine. Encouraged by the success of this experiment, Fulton and Livingston ordered a steam engine from Watt and Bolton in England to be shipped to America, where Fulton found it on his return in 1806. In the following year, the Clermont was built and launched in East River. Its successful trip opened the way to a complete revolution of water transportation. Within the next few years, so rapid was the adoption of this new method of travel, steamboats came into use upon the principal rivers and the Great Lakes, rendering splendid assistance to establishing easy communication between distant sections of our country traversed by the great waterways. Fulton and Livingston, to the economic development and enrichment of America, one has only to review the remarkable progress made in water transportation, contrasting the present accomplishments with those of 100 years ago. Now, through his vision, patience, and persistence, he found success where others had failed, and in so doing, opened the way to the rapid development of this mighty agency in the advance of civilization. Section 68, Samuel F.B. Morse, a pioneer of modern communication. Without our present facilities of communication, modern civilization could not continue. Deprived of telegraph, telephone, and radio, the wheels of industry would be stopped and the economic welfare of nations destroyed. We cannot too greatly emphasize this benefaction conferred upon all people through the accomplishments of Samuel Morse and the brilliant men who followed him with improvements upon his basic invention, the telegraph. Morse trained himself to think. Of all the thousands whose attention was engaged by opening of the Erie Canal in 1825, he alone caught the significance of the passage of time in relaying the message heralding that event. The signal was delivered by cannon placed at intervals between Buffalo and New York City. The successive reports of which conveyed from one emplacement to the next consumed 1.5 hours of time in delivering the message a distance of 500 miles. Invention of the telegraph. Now, reason and logic compelled him to believe that electricity made to travel many miles over a copper wire in an instant of time could by some method be interrupted in its passage so as to produce certain signals susceptible of interpretation. Busy in his profession as an artist in London, Italy, France, and at home, the idea of the control of electricity ever persisted in his mind. With the passage of years, his patience was rewarded with the invention of a crude telegraphic instrument and a system of dot and dash signals to be used therewith. Forming a partnership with Alfred Vail, they labored together in the perfection of the device under their funds were exhausted. Undismayed, their persistent appeal to Congress for assistance was finally rewarded with an appropriation of $80,000 for the erection of a telegraph line, a distance of 40 miles between the cities of Baltimore and Washington. With the completion of its construction, on the morning of May 24, 1844, in the presence of the chief officers of the government, in the Supreme Court room of the Capitol, Professor Morse, operating the key of his instrument, successfully transmitted to the wonder of all present that the first and memorable message, "What hath God wrought?" What hath God wrought? Improvement and amplification. Morse was a man of vision. He predicted the day when telegraph lines would span the earth and bridge the seas. Yet even his far-seeing mind could never have encompassed the stupendous results which have come from his creation as a rich boon to all mankind. I want to stop there for a second. You got to really think about that for a second. Morse was a man who he saw something in his mind. He had a grand vision. He was specific in what he wanted to see in this world in terms of how we communicated. And just think about how we have advanced from wires to wireless using the ether in the air, in the atmosphere, instead of copper wires. What a jump in communication and technology. This is absolutely amazing. It seems like our sense of invention has diminished over the decades, over the last couple centuries even. Why? Because, again, we have a system of government, in which I call the de facto corporate government. They don't want people being inventive. And then those that are inventive and come up with successful prototypes, like an automobile that runs off water instead of gasoline or diesel, these people are either attempted to be bought off and paid for, you know, paid off, so their invention never sees the light of day, interrupting the energy industry. And if they don't comply, well, they're killed off. Now, I'm not saying that deters a lot of people from being inventive, but you come up with a, you know, groundbreaking idea. Certain powers that be that don't want their profits of whatever it is that they're making, don't want to come in the way of what they do and how they make their money, they will first try to buy you off. And when that doesn't work, they kill you. It's just that simple. Continuing on. Men, great in scientific accomplishments, have followed with improvements and amplifications upon his invention. Alexander Bell and Associates applied his principle in perfecting the telephone. Thomas Edison improved the technique as telegraph operator and inventor, following his own powers of deduction into still broader fields. Marconi and others enriched his creative efforts in the field of wireless communications. And each passing year witnesses other improvement. Other improvements and accomplishment, all a living testimonial to Samuel Morse, the man of vision, who, standing apart from the crowd, sold himself to a great idea, persisted against all odds until his efforts were crowned with success. Section 69, Captain John Ericsson, pioneer of modern battleship. John Ericsson, a native of Sweden, directed his inventive genius to improvements in steam navigation. He claimed the invention of the screw propeller, but was unable to prove priority. Coming to the United States in 1839, he built the first screw propeller warships, the Princeton. This was the first steamship ever constructed, with her boilers and engines below the waterline, and was the beginning of the steam marine of the world. The Monitor. Ericsson would probably have remained unknown to the nation at large had it not been for his achievements during the Civil War. Using the revolving turret patents of Theodore Ruggles Timby, he combined a structure with all machinery below the waterline, leaving the turrets alone exposed to attack. This small vessel, known as the Monitor, called in derision the Yankee Cheese Box. In its victory over the Mare May, made Ericsson famous in a day. The Navy and Merchant Marine. This caused a revolution in naval development among the world powers, increasing the effectiveness of fighting ships, thereby greatly strengthening the offensive and defensive forces of nations in proportion to their naval tonnage. Through the genius of John Ericsson, the modern Navy and Merchant Marine has become one of the greatest factors in the development of security and security of nations. I also want to pause here for a moment. Speaking of the Navy, as a fuel hauler, I traverse a lot of these roads here in Michigan, and I pay attention to a lot of different things. So if there's anything that changes, like billboards or new buildings or anything like that, I notice. Spend 12 hours a day on these roads. What I noticed lately is just over the last 24 to 36 hours, billboards, six of them at least, five to six of them that I can recall, in different parts of Michigan that are all about an hour apart from each other, started popping up about the Navy. Now, maybe it's a recruitment tool, but I didn't see, you know, hey, call this number or anything like that. There is one particular billboard that I thought was very interesting. That's kind of near my county. And it said, they hide, we seek, meaning the bad guys. It was such a cool billboard to see, but I just thought that was kind of something that was noteworthy. But yeah, I've started seeing a lot of billboards going up, maybe promoting, trying to get more people in the Navy. I don't know. Who knows? But the Navy and Merchant Marines are the great, you know, have become, like I said, in this, what I just read here, have become the greatest factors in the development and security of nations. Now, two more sections, 70 and 71. So section 70, Major Walter Reed. That sounds familiar, right? Walter Reed Medical Center, right? All the presidents go to. Walter Reed, conqueror of yellow fever. Major Walter Reed, a surgeon in the United States Army, conducted a long series of experiments in Cuba and discovered the source of yellow fever to be a I might mispronounce this word, and if I do, my apologies. Stigomia, I believe is how it's pronounced. I believe. Just trying to see here. Let's see what this word is. Hold on. That didn't work out very well for me. Crap. And I just lost my spot because the computer wanted to be, well, I shouldn't say the computer, user error. Let me just take accountability for my own mistake here. I just got to bring my font back up because everything went to lower font. What I tried doing was doing a speak to text option on my Mac. And when I did that, it completely made me lose my spot. So now I got to go find it. Here we go. Oh, nope, way out of base here. Sorry about this, guys. This is not exactly what I call perfect production, but, you know, look, at least you know that I'm infallible. I am, you know, subject to mistakes, it's, you know, like anybody. Okay, here we go. Yeah, so I believe the word is stigomia, mosquito, okay? That's what he discovered. The source of yellow fever came from was a certain kind of mosquito. Now, continuing reading. The dream of his youth had been to be permitted to alleviate in some degree the sufferings of humanity and all his efforts, and without the thought of self, were spent in striving toward this goal. Now, within a few months after his discovery, Havana, which had been ravaged by this disease far more than 150 years, was cleared of the disease. Section 71, last section. Major General William C. Gorgas, conqueror of malaria. Now, through the efforts of Major General William C. Gorgas, who was in command of the medical and sanitary organizations of the United States Army in Panama, this pestiferous district was converted into a healthy region. The French enterprise of the Isthmus of Panama was completely wrecked by the fevers common to that region. 75% of the employees from France died from the disease within a few months after they had landed on the Isthmus. As a result of this, of the intensive efforts of Dr. Gorgas, the situation was conquered and Panama has become one of the healthiest spots on the continent. And that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is the reading of the final, you know, the final, the conclusion of lesson four of Great Americans and Their Achievements. Tell you, it really goes to show you that America, yes, America has a dark history. There's no doubt about it, especially when you look at what the early government of the of its time what some of the people have done to the Native Americans who were already on this land before Europeans came here. They've destroyed them. And I'm not saying that the Native Americans weren't at odds with each other, some tribes, obviously, you know, it's just human nature. But when the white man came, and no, I'm not being apologetic, so let's not get that twisted right now. But when the European white man came and, you know, started settling in this continent, they've done a lot of bad things. So, yes, America has a dark history. Man has original sin, or as some would say, originated sin. And no man is perfect except Jesus, right? The only man that walked the earth who I would say would be the only perfect man who ever walked on this earth. Hence why I call this podcast His Hard Line, because this is a hard line that we cannot ever cross, that's held not just by us, but the hard line that Jesus laid down for us to also make sure we hold. We have a line that must be held and towed, okay? Aside from the dark history that America has, the people in this country, obviously not all evil, have been very instrumental to our world today, how we live, the conveniences that we get to benefit from, right? The conveniences that the posterity get to enjoy. There was a lot of innovation, a lot of invention, a lot of brilliant minds back in that day that came up with many, many ways to solve big problems that we don't ever have to worry about today. But yet we still take advantage and take for granted all of these conveniences, the cell phone, electricity. We don't have to think about electricity except by paying the power bill and flipping a switch in our house to make sure that we can see where we're going. Running indoor water so we don't have to go outside in 20-degree weather in Michigan in the middle of January to go do our business in an outhouse. We have the thing what's called an automobile to get us from point A to point B, and we don't have to rely on horse and buggy. We have so many conveniences that many people don't even realize, because a lot of people don't stop and think, wow, I get to benefit from all these great people. People just take this stuff for granted. People have no self-reflection. They have no way. They see most people, not all people, but most people by and large, which have been indoctrinated by the public indoctrination systems called public schools, right? And they have been taught to just go along to get along. Memorize these dates. Memorize what we tell you. Here's this test. We need to make sure you know how to memorize things. Oh, by the way, go to college. Memorize more information we're going to feed you. Take a test. Let's make sure you remember the narrative that we are peddling to you. And then when you reach a certain level in college and you get that bachelor's degree or master's degree, we'll know what level of indoctrination that we have at, you know, for you. So then we know that you are going to be fit for corporate America, and we can give you and reward you with a $70,000 to $80,000 a year job with maybe some promises of promotion and possibly ending your career after 35 or 40 years, making $130,000. Living that American dream. It makes you wonder why a lot of these big corporations require college degrees. Now, again, I'm not diminishing higher education because it's needed for certain fields. Like, you know, even though I'm not a big fan of the medical establishment, but if you're going to be a doctor, quote unquote, and I use that word loosely, because I believe there's some people that truly go into the medical profession to really help people, right? Just like nurses. Just like how people go into law enforcement to truly protect and serve. But then you've got people out there that have different agendas, right? So obviously, if you're going to go to be a doctor, though, and you have your heart in the right place, obviously you need a higher education. If you're going to perform heart surgery, yes, that needs higher education. If you're going to perform brain surgery, yes, that requires higher education. If you're going to build a space shuttle that's going to go out in the atmosphere, okay, and yes, I know there's conspiracy theories on like whether we had the moon landing. We're not going to get into that. But, you know, if you're going to develop spaceships and things like that that go up into the air, okay, or airplanes. Let's just use that. Airplanes, air travel. We all use them. And which, by the way, I don't know what's going on in the news, but it seems like Boeing is, all their planes are falling apart in the sky and on the ground. It's insane. But if you're going to build an airplane and work for a company that builds airplanes, or design airplanes, yeah, you need a specialized type of education. But in order to go in for marketing or business administration or accounting, you don't need a college degree for that. Give me a break. That's something that can be taught just like an apprenticeship for being an electrician. You do not need a 5-6 or, you know, a 4-6 year degree or a, you know, a doctorate. You don't need that. Well, Jason, how do you know what they need? Because I know. I was in marketing. I held positions that typically required 4-year degrees. I don't have a 4-year degree. Hell, I don't even have a 2-year degree. Yeah, I did some college, didn't get a degree. And again, I'm not cutting down anybody who has a 5-year or, you know, a college degree, 4-6 year degree. It doesn't matter. I'm not cutting anybody down that has a degree. If you got it, great. I hope you're using it. Hopefully you're getting a return on investment, and hopefully you're not stuck in a loan, a student loan for many, many decades that will never get forgiven, by the way. Unless, you know, we get our assembly estates, because again, all the money and all the loans that were made by these fraudulent banks were made fraudulently because it was all underneath the guise of true money, which is not true money. It's not backed by gold and silver. Maybe one day we'll see all of our debt erased when we return back to sound money. I'm not sure when that happens. I'm not sure how that happens, but I do believe it's still coming. Jason, that seems a little bit romantic, don't you think? That seems like a far-fetched romantic thought. Well, maybe it is to you, but when you see what I see, it's not that far-fetched. But at the end of the day, you don't need a higher education to work in corporate America. You don't need a higher education to be inventive, to be innovative, to be original. All you have to do is be a critical thinker, have the wherewithal within you, be resilient, persistent, consistent in your efforts, because again, we all have the same 24 hours in a day. How are you going to utilize that? See, the public school systems and colleges, they don't want you to think outside the box. They just want you to conform to their ways of thinking, their agenda. And so the early people of us, you know, of the founding of this country, while yes, again, there is a dark history, there is also a bright, resilient history that shows how people can forge forward through times of adversity, through tough, challenging economic periods of time in their life, and still make something of themselves. There's something to be said about that. So anyway, with that, I say, let's have a prayer, huh? Let's have a prayer. Heavenly Father, we come before you with hearts full of gratitude for the blessing that you've bestowed upon us, both in times of abundance and in times of need, just as the Apostle Paul learned to be content in all circumstances. And we ask that you help us cultivate a spirit of resilience and gratitude, knowing that our strength comes from you. Grant us the courage to face challenges with unwavering determination and the faith to trust in your guidance and provision. In moments of adversity, may we find solace in your presence, and may we draw upon the inner strength that you only provide. As we reflect on the trials and triumphs of our ancestors who forged ahead in the face of uncertainty, inspire us to embody the same spirit of perseverance and resilience. May we honor their legacy by embracing the opportunities and challenges that lie before us, not only with courage, but with conviction. We ask that you teach us to be mindful of kindness and being generous to others, recognizing the importance of community and mutual support in our journey through life. And just as our early settlers leaned on one another for strength and solidarity, I just ask and hope that we can extend a helping hand to those in need and cultivate bonds of compassion and unity within our communities. Because, Lord, you know we need unity in our communities. We need it ever so badly. So, Father, we just ask that you guide us in our endeavors. Help us with the reassembly of our states to return to original jurisdiction and to return, not just to original jurisdiction, but to restore this Republican form of government and to put you back on the pedestal in the public square once again. And we ask that you grant us the wisdom to discern your will in all things. And may we always remain steadfast in our faith, knowing that you, or with you, all things are possible. We pray all this in your holy Son's name, Jesus. Amen. So remember, ladies and gentlemen, here at His Heart Line, we are firm, we are steadfast, and we are uncompromising. We will not allow the enemy to ever cross this line again. It is our duty to hold that line, for the enemy seeks to lure us into apathy, complacency, fear, doubt, anxiety, and hopelessness. I get it. I know. And it aims to enslave us mentally, trying to hinder our progress towards self-mastery, trying to hinder our progress towards self-governance, and to destroy our self-procured relationship with our Heavenly Father. So I say, let us remain vigilant and resolute in our commitment to holding this line. God bless, ladies and gentlemen. And remember, it was always a pleasure, still will always be a pleasure and an honor to serve you here at His Heart Line. We will catch up with you here next time.
To find more shows like this, you can visit hishardline.com. And to learn more about your involvement with your local General Jural Assembly, you can visit national-assembly.net. His Heartline Podcast. His Heartline Podcast. Podcast. Please exercise caution regarding any organization purporting to be an assembly and claiming similar objectives such as the American States Assembly, National Liberty Alliance, Life Force, Beacon 37, RUSA Tactical Civics, or any entity diverging from the officially recognized Michigan model acknowledged by 7 countries and the United States military. Furthermore, it's important to clarify that we do not endorse or recognize status corrections.